This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Hello and welcome back to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bill McCush. This week, the judges on Canada's Got Talent got a surprise double dose of some fine Glace Bay talent. We'll get the nuts and bolts on the recent provincial budget and hear the reaction from an opposition MLA in Cape Breton. On The Good Sentence, Paul McDougall talks to an up-and-coming writer from Sydney Mines, and we'll talk to a radio broadcasting legend on the air longer than anyone to ever sit in front of the microphone. That's up first with Bill Bradley.
When you think about radio broadcasting, there's one lady that rises above everybody else. Mary McCoy is her name. She's from Texas and works at K-Star Country. She's been on the air almost 72 years and just recently recognized by Guinness Book of Records. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program Mary McCoy. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. It's my pleasure to be with you and all my friends in Canada.
I've been in radio for almost 36 years, but you've got me beat by a number of years, almost 72 years in the business. Tell us back when you started in the business. How did you get to be on the radio?
Well, this happened in 1951 when KMCO, a radio, signed on April 15th of 1951. I had been singing on a talent show at the Crichton Theater prior to that, and the manager, Bert Bagley, called the manager of the radio station, which was Jimmy Darrell, who taught me everything I know about radio. Bert had told him about me. Of course, we moved to Conroe. Daddy was a fallen planer and sawmill worker. And when we moved here, well, we lived in a tent.
A tent?
Didn't have a whole lot of money. But we had lots of love. That was my mom and dad and I. And my dream, and also it was my mom and dad's dream, that I get to be in radio. That's what I wanted to do. Radio, I wanted to sing. And I wanted to make my own records. When Bert called Jimmy, Jimmy told him, he called the school for me because we didn't have telephone. Mm-hmm. And he said, Mary, I've heard a lot about you. He said, I want you to come up and be on our talent show because they had open house on Sunday, the April 15th, and that following Saturday was when they went on the air. Well, I was on that talent show. After the show was over, well, he said, Mary, do you know enough songs to do 15 minutes? And, of course, to me, that sounded like an eternity. I had told him, though, that I'd have to borrow a guitar and I'd have to get a ride to the radio station. So I did. I found me a guitar, which was three times my size because a puff of wind would have blown me away. And I rode the big old Greyhound bus into Conroe. And when I got there, well, after the show, he said, do you know enough songs to do 15 minutes? Now, that did sound like an eternity to me.
Wow. Yes, yeah, 15 minutes.
I said, well, I can do it because I was so determined I wanted to be on radio. So he said, now, after the show was over, he said, now, you go home and you listen to yourself on the radio at 1 o'clock. Well, when that big old bus took me back home, I got just as close to that radio as I could. And that was the worst mistake in the world because, Bill, I cried. I thought that was the worst thing I ever heard.
Really?
And I did. I told my mom, I said, my career has ended. And all my life, that was my dream. And so she said, Mary, don't look at it that way. You sound great. Well, the next week, I got another call from Jimmy Darrell, and he told me, he said, Mary, the manager of the station, he said, guess what, Mary, we have a sponsor for your show.
Really?
I said, you've got to be kidding. Brown Sinclair Service Station. He sponsored my show for about 4 or 5 months, and then I told Jimmy, I said, Jimmy, I want my own record show. I want to be able to play the records artists, you know, that I listen to. I'm having a hard time with my throat this morning, Bill, so you'll have to forgive me. So they worked with me day and night. They sat me in a little booth, and I would introduce my records. Finally, the guy that was on the board, he got tired of that. Mm-hmm. He came in there one day, and he said, Mary, come here. So he took me in the control room, and he says, now sit down. Then he looked at me and said, I'll see you later. And I said, it was sink or swim. So I swam. And I've been swimming for 72 years on the radio.
That's absolutely incredible. Incredible career. You're still going today. So you have your own show. You have to also have a co-star, our co-host.
I do. He is one of the best. Larry Dalla and I have worked together for a long time. And I've known him, gosh, I guess about 50 years. As a matter of fact, we will be with K-Star together for 25 years. Radio has, of course, it's changed a whole lot, Bill.
You know it has.
Those 78s, they were so big that they weighed more than I did, it seemed like.
I saw some pictures online, Mary, on your Facebook page and the radio station. You're a pretty tiny lady.
I would file those records. And then, but let me tell you, the funniest thing that happened was the day that that little 45... I held that little 45 record in my hand, and that was so strange. You know, back then we had people like the artists. They came by to visit with you at the station. Jim Reeves, I had Johnny Cash.
So you met all these people?
Yes, and I have shared the stage with not all of them, but most of them, because my one wish was to make records, like I said, in radio and Saint, but in 2013, I fell and I broke my neck. I had three major surgeries. And of course, after all of that, I could, because the first two surgeries that I had, they put a hole in my vocal cord and I haven't been able to sing since. But we play my records.
And you're still going strong at 85. Now, I saw a picture in the newspaper there, and I can't remember the name of the local newspaper, but there's a picture of you and Elvis Presley. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, that was the greatest thrill of my life. I'll tell you what. My manager, Gabe Tucker, was personal friends with Colonel Tom Parker. And, of course, that's the way I met Elvis, because I was on the Louisiana Hayride one Saturday night with Elvis and all his, and his band, Scotty and Bill and the drummer. They backed me along with Floyd Kramer on the show that night. Before we started, I was standing at the foot of the stairs in the auditorium, and he walked up to me and he said, Mary, he said, why don't we go get something to eat? And I said, well, sure, because I could always eat. But when he asked me that, I was looking behind him. There were about 15 girls that lined up behind him. I told him, I said, Elvis, you go on because you have plenty of company, and I'll stay here. And when you get back, you'll find me right where I am right now. So, and I stayed there till he got back. And the next time I was with him, we brought the hayride to Conroe, the high school football stadium. Never forget that night as long as I live. I want you to know, Bill, that everybody asked me about Elvis. You could not ask for a better person. He had so much respect. And the thing that I noticed right off, at first, it was the love that he had for his mother. He talked about her. He would have given his shirt off his back if you asked him for it. That's just the type of person that he was. And 42 years of age was much, much too young for him to go. That's memories that I'll always have.
That picture that I saw, him giving you a big hug, how did that come about?
Well, we were out on the stage, and that was right before he went on the stage there again. We were standing there, and someone said, oh, said, we want a picture. And so that's how the picture came about.
Wow. A lot of memories, Mary. A lot of years of being on the radio.
On another show there in Houston with Biff Collie and George Jones and all of them. I was 16, Bill, when all this happened.
Elvis was 19, and you were 16 when you met Elvis.
Uh-huh.
And big stars like Elvis and Jim Reeves, and you're just blowing my mind right now, Mary, because these are some of the artists that I respect from listening to. My mom used to listen to a lot of these artists back in the day. And tell me something, Mary. One of my favorites, and one of my mom's favorites, was Charlie Pride. Did you ever get a chance to meet him?
Oh, you bet I did. In fact, I went to Nashville. My boss, at that time I was working for the Owens, and he sent me to Nashville up to Opryland, and I was interviewing everybody. That was the first time I met Charlie. But Charlie Pride was here in Conroe Ballroom, and then we had one, Larry Butler, the 21 Club, and he was so nice. You couldn't ask there again. I've always said that people in the entertainment world, it's just one big happy family. It's because you feel like you've known them all your life once you work with them. That's just like talking with you, Bill. That's the way I feel about you.
Well, that's a compliment coming from you, Mary. So let's fast forward all of these years later, almost 72 years on the air. How did the Guinness World Record thing come about?
I have to give my little daughter, my youngest daughter, credit for that, because about a year ago, the owner of the radio station that I'm presently with, K-Star Country, Ben Amato, asked me, said, Mary, how long have you been in radio? And so I told him, and he mentioned it to the sales manager and told her, said, why don't you get to work on that and see and find out the history of the World Guinness Book of Records? Well, she had started, but she had too much work to do. And my daughter, her name is Kim. She is so smart. I'll tell you, that little thing, she worked all this past year getting clippings, finding out all that she could. And I'll tell you what, last week, of course, the weeks go by so fast, but the morning she came in, I was in getting dressed to go to work. She says, well, Mama, we made it. I said, what are you talking about? She said, you're in the World Guinness Book of Records. And I said, of course, I haven't been the same since. I'll tell you what, I haven't got my feet off the ground.
I bet. First, meeting Elvis all of those years ago, and now, almost 72 years later, in the Guinness World Book of Records. Congratulations, Mary. And I just wanted to call to see, you know, how this whole story came about, and you're still on the air. And actually, I got to let you go here in a few minutes, because you're getting ready for your radio show coming up, right?
Very shortly.
Yeah. Mary, listen, I really appreciate this, and I heard some other clips from people on the internet that you're not going to retire. You're going to continue to do this as long as you can, right?
Retirement is not in my vocabulary, Bill. Long as the good Lord will give me the strength to go, I hope to be with you a long, long time.
All right, Mary. So before we go here, I want to hear how you sign on or sign off at the radio station.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Mary McCoy. And then when my partner and I sign off, I always thank everybody. I give our sponsors and tell them how much I love everybody. That's the key to my story, Bill, is it's the people, my love for people, and I make them sourdough bread, too.
Mary, so much appreciate this, and continued success in your career. It's such a pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you so much, and it has been a pleasure. Tell your little mom hello, okay?
I will. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Nineteen-year-old Evan Turnbull was supposed to be the only contestant from Nova Scotia to appear on Canada's Got Talent, but his twin brother then surprised the audience and judges and came up on stage to join in the performance, and then the judges gave a green light for the next round. Here's Evan getting underway with comedian Howie Mandel.
Good evening. How's it going?
It's going good, eh?
Oh, yay.
Oh, yeah. What's your name?
I'm Evan Turnbull.
Where are you from?
Glace Bay, Nova Scotia.
So's everybody else. Yeah, right on.
It's a 25-hour car ride to get here.
Did you drive?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Me with my parents.
How old are you?
I'm 19.
You're obviously a singer. How long have you been singing?
I've been singing for 2 or 3 years now.
Wow. And what do you do full time?
Well, I did work at Tim Hortons, but,
What's your favorite donut?
Toasted coconut.
Wow.
Yeah, buddy.
Are you eating something? No, it's okay. Is it a Timbit?
No, it's a cough drop.
Do you have a cough?
A little bit. I'm all right.
Oh, no, don't tell Howie that.
Great, great. So you've only been doing this for like 2 years. What do you want out of this?
I'd like to make this my career.
All right. Good luck. So we'll see what 2 years of singing and slinging coffee does. Go ahead, buddy.
My Maria. Don't you know I've come a long, long way. I've been longing to see her when she's around. Makes my moves
away. You can sing.
Sweet Maria. And the sunlight surely hurts my eyes. I'm a lonely dreamer on the highway. Sunlight when the skies are gray. She treats me so right, lady. Take me away. My Maria.
Oh, Maria, I love you, girl. Oh, my Maria.
Maria.
Oh, Maria, I love you, girl. Maria, I love you.
Gosh, we thought we were getting coffee. We got a double-double.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you did, boy. Yeah, you did.
That's amazing. That's exactly what Canada's Got Talent is all about. Not only fantastic talent, fantastic surprises, originality.
Thank you.
I love you guys. I believe what we saw tonight is the beginning of a big career.
That's awesome. Thank you very much.
I got to say, your voices, it's just like butter. That was amazing.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I was watching you sing, and then I heard the harmonies. I was like, that's cheating. Does he have a background track?
That's what I thought, too.
And then all of a sudden, I'm looking at you, and then I'm like, oh, here he comes out of the audience. What? I was like, for me to be surprised on this show, it takes a lot. Honestly, that was great setup. You guys sounded dope, but we had a really good time.
Yes.
Thank you very much. That's awesome.
And what's your name?
I'm Aaron Turnbull.
I think the Turnbull Brothers is going to be a name that people are going to be talking about. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I want to give you your first yes to move on.
Oh, wait. Yes.
I'm honored to give you your second yes. Woo. Three to move on to the next round will come courtesy of me. Yes.
Yes.
And for everybody that's back east, you get a yes, sir.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
They're going to Tim Hortons.
On the Good Sentence with Paul McDougall. Alex Cormier is a Sydney Mines writer and recently had her first piece of fiction published. Paul talks to her about her new book and her other works and the writing and publishing process in general.
So, Alex, you've had some recent success with a novella you had written when you were about 16, but it's you'd put it in the shelf, I guess, or a drawer for 20 years and recently decided to publish it, and then it appears a major U.S. Book publishing and retailer has picked it up. So why don't I let's just start off with that story, that book, and then we'll go backwards a bit into your writing career. Okay.
I wrote I Loved You by Christmas. It did not have a title at the time. I wrote it when I was in grade 10 in high school, 2004. I used to write a lot as a teenager because I had friends, but I spent quite a bit of time alone, and writing really made me feel less alone. I had a lot of ideas in my head, and I wrote it, and like many pieces of writing I've done from back then, I boxed it up with things after high school. We actually put it out in the shed. And I've done some publishing before that, but last year when we were going through things in our shed, I happened to find a large amount of several folders. And when I skimmed through this story, something in my gut just said that I should take it, I should re-edit it and look at it. and I decided to put it out into the world.
And then in the fall there, it was picked up by Barnes & Noble. Was it sort of like, a vindication or just something that made you, you thought, well, yeah, look, somebody's liking what I'm doing and I've been toiling away here writing for a while and now, I'm kind of listed with a big publishing company. How did that feel?
It honestly, the moment that I opened my inbox and I had seen the link sent to me, clicked on it, and I almost had, I'm maybe not the extreme optimistic kind of person, but I do have moments in life where my gut instinct has not proven me wrong yet, at least, and it almost felt like anything could be possible. It felt like I kind of went back to when I was younger, because when I was 16, if you had told me this would be available and people would like it and buy it, I would have laughed in your face, because I didn't think anybody would want to read stories I came up with in my mind.
Here's, I'm going to, excuse me, give this out to our Coast listeners. This is a review from Amazon.ca of your book, a short review someone left there. And as the reviewer says, it's a beautiful love story. It's well written and has a tragic element that just holds you wandering and wanting to find the truth. So, I mean, that's quite a nice little review, a one-sentence review. Lovely, really. It's intrigued me. I haven't read your story, your novella yet, but I will eventually. So, that's really a nice review. And all the reviewers there are all 5 stars. So people that are reading it, and not everybody leaves reviews on websites, but the ones that have for your book have said some other equally as nice things about it. So why don't you just tell us, no spoilers or anything, because we don't want to do that, but tell us just a little bit about, a little teaser about what this particular story, piece of fiction, is about, okay?
Yep. It is about the main character. The female lead is Phoebe Monroe. She lives a very quiet life above a bookstore. She actually works there as well. And one evening, just shortly before Christmas, a gentleman comes into the library looking for books, and his name is Eric Banks. And they have no idea the story they're about to live together and experience together. And I don't want to speak too much because it'll give away a lot, but they go through many things together, and the story is definitely a representation of love and living in the moment and just the thrill of experiencing it all.
Is it set in Cape Breton?
Actually, it is. I didn't really have a thought process when I was writing about where it was located, to be just very honest with you. I did envision a small town for sure. So perhaps it could be, but I didn't put any elements in it that would necessarily mean that it was here.
And again, really a lot of 4s and 5 reviews of your books, especially that one there. And a reader from the U.S. says, it's a fantastic read, definitely a book for not only autism parents, but every parent. So that's what, like, a reader. And then I had another one. There's another one from a reader says, I don't have any children at all of my own, but I can certainly get a better feeling of having children and having an autistic child from the book. So do you want to just talk a little bit about that and what you think of that?
I think that it's so nice, because when I wrote it, I wasn't sure what I was going to do with it. I took a few months just to get my thoughts together. And as I worked on it, it became so much bigger to me, which reflects in the reviews, which is what you want. Like, I write because I want to tell stories, and even if it's from my own life and the experience we have as an autism family, I think that, again, I repeat myself, but we all have something to bring to the table. And if I could change something or have somebody feel anything from it and maybe change their mind on some things, maybe change their perspective and be a little bit more educated. I'm definitely not, I'm nobody special, but I'm a mother, and like all mothers and all parents, I think that we want the world to be a kinder place and to be more open-minded.
In a recent piece in the Cape Breton Post, you said to give advice for either a younger writer or a newer writer of any age or someone who just wants to write to just not worry about what other people are saying about your writing or saying you can't do this or you can't do that. Just go out and do it. And that appears to be the route you took. You've done it. You wanted to publish it. I take it you used Amazon for all the books. And they're out there now, and people are reading them. You want to just talk a little bit about the process?
I really didn't know where to start when I was in the beginning, and thankfully I reached out 6 years ago to the community kind of out in the world and in support groups and whatnot of indie authors, and they kind of guided my way. And as of right now, the stages that I take is I publish through Kindle Direct Publishing. I take hold and write my own things, but I have an editor and I have beta readers who take a look at it. I have a few proofreaders that take a look. Like, there's a whole process, but technically I may not be running the machine, but I'm managing it just with self-publishing. That's what comes with it, right? I enjoy doing it. Besides my kids, it's the biggest. It gives me such a thrill and a drive, and it's honestly what I've always wanted to do. So I love the process. It's hard, and there's a lot of late nights. It's just my husband and I and our kids. We don't have any child care or anything. I homeschool full-time, but I just think that you can figure things out with whatever you have, no matter how big or small that is.
Yeah, that's great to hear that that's working for you. Somewhere else I'd read that you mentioned that you said, when I talk to readers or readers are talking to me, readers of like your work, you say you know that they must have enjoyed or liked or got something out of what you're doing, because I can tell they feel the emotion, meaning in your stories. Do you want to just talk about that?
I get asked a lot, that there's a reason that I'm explaining this part. I get asked a lot, like, they're like, oh, you must be so excited, you're selling a bunch, and financial success. And I'm like, that's not why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because books and reading, as well as music and movies, in my own opinion, but books make people feel, make people think. They can maybe escape life for a little bit. Maybe it changes things for them. Maybe it comforts them. And so when I am, in the presence of a reader, whether they message me or whether I bump into them when I'm out in the community, and I've written a perspective of a character, maybe it's their storyline, that the reader could empathize with or feel something. That's all I've ever wanted. I wanted to write characters out in the world or even things from my own life. When I published nonfiction, I published a book about grief. And I think that human beings, as corny as that sounds, coming together with just that they felt something similar brings us all closer together, and it's all I could ever want.
Well, that's who else could want anything else either? I think it's wonderful. I think you've had, you're doing what you want. You're saying what you're saying in words. You're getting it out there. You're publishing them, and people want to read them. They're easily accessible. You put your name, Alex Cormier, into the internet now. You pop up, and
You know what? I'll tell you. I had that this morning. My mother had called to check in like she does, and this morning she's like, you do know you come up on Google now, right? And it's so crazy. It's good, but it's so crazy to think about.
Yeah, so you live in Sydney Mines, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. So I'm sure our Coast Signal reaches across the water there. I know lots of people are in Sydney Mines in the area that would know you, the north side, the Sydney area and whatever. I encourage people to pay attention to what you're doing. Go to your Facebook site, go to your website. Just your name alone will bring our listeners to find out what Alex is up to. She's always updating stuff on her site, more writings there, musings on life, on her two sons, Emmett and Samuel. Cool names, by the way. I hope everything works out well with them and you and your husband. So why don't you... Why don't you leave us with one good sentence from I Loved You by Christmas.
Okay. Remember when we met, you told me you wanted someone to adore. Well, I need you to know I adore you, have adored you. I hope you know this, and I hope you know you are my home too.
Repairing the province's faltering healthcare system was the centerpiece of the provincial government's $14 billion budget tabled last week, with spending on health jumping 13% over the next year alone. To deliver on that promise, the Tories' second budget will again drop into deficit, this time by $278 million, with health-related spending expected to be increased by $750 million to $6.5 billion. That category now accounts for about 45% of total spending. Houston's government announced 38 health initiatives, many of them aimed at reducing healthcare wait times and eliminating a chronic shortage of doctors. Here's Deputy Premier and Finance Minister Alan McMaster.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today I'm pleased to present the 2023-24 provincial budget. This budget is about empowering people. When people are empowered, they feel more in control and more optimistic about their future. This budget does just that. It focuses on three main areas. Action for healthcare, our strategic plan to grow the healthcare workforce and get Nova Scotians faster access to the care they need. A healthy economy, which helps to pay for the healthcare system Nova Scotians deserve and lays the foundation for a thriving province. And healthy communities. By addressing the factors affecting people's health and well-being, like child poverty, housing, inclusion, and education, we can help improve the quality of life for all Nova Scotians. I believe the most important thing governments can do is prepare for the future, ensuring we have the services and infrastructure that the growth we are seeing demands. Mr. Speaker, in the last year, we've experienced the fastest annual population growth since 1926, almost 100 years ago. Why 1926? Because that's as far back as our economists can track annual data. We are seeing the tightest labor markets since the early 1970s, with unemployment rates falling to as low as 6.5%. The world is experiencing inflation. Much of this inflation has been created by supply chain interruptions coming out of the pandemic and Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which has driven up the price of fossil fuels. And we know that drives up the price of everything else. In July, the federal government placed its carbon tax on fuels, and this will prove to be a drag on the economy. Our government is offering solutions to help navigate through these times of change and growth. Because with growth comes opportunities. Growth can transform our economy. Nova Scotia has felt the effects of the opposite of growth too many times. And let me tell you, I would much rather be dealing with opportunities that come with growth than the challenges that come with decline. Growth brings in new investment, new ideas, a new perspective. It opens doors for entrepreneurs who want to start a business and for business owners that want to grow and venture into new markets. Nova Scotia's economy proved more resilient and recharged more quickly through the pandemic. Today, our exports are up beyond pre-pandemic levels. We have reached record high employment. We are seeing strong recovery in the tourism sector. And housing construction is working at full steam, trying to keep up with the demands of a growing population. This has meant increased revenues for the provincial government, giving us capacity to make the significant investments we are making to fix healthcare. The budget I'm tabling today is about meeting this moment in time. It will fuel the momentum of the work we've started, investing in solutions that will make life better for Nova Scotians and build a healthier, more thriving province. With $14.4 billion in spending, we have the ability to empower people and address our province's priorities. And Mr. Speaker, health care is at the top of the list. The centerpiece of this budget is health care. We are taking an all-hands-on-deck approach, and the Premier and our Ministers of Health are engaging healthcare leaders, everyone working in the healthcare system, regulators, service providers, as well as our universities and colleges. We are very pleased they are stepping up to the plate. In every step we take, we want to see real results for Nova Scotia families. Greater access to doctors, more nurses at the bedside, healthcare providers working to the full scope of their abilities, shorter wait times, better mental health services, ambulances there when you need them, more hospital beds and more long-term care spaces and emergency departments that work. These are the results Nova Scotians want. Mr. Speaker, these results are only possible if we have enough people delivering health care. Our plan is about building healthcare teams with better working conditions, opportunities for mentorship and training, less red tape, modern hospitals and technology, and having the tools they need to provide a high standard of care. This is how we empower our teams and how Nova Scotia becomes a magnet for health providers. We're opening up more opportunities for people who want to train as a nurse, paramedic or continuing care assistant, with more training spaces, financial incentives, and a direct path to a job. We're also piloting new approaches to recruiting more mental health care providers. Mr. Speaker, people living in rural Nova Scotia need more doctors. And we've made a nearly $60 million investment now so that in a few short years, more family doctors with a focus on rural health will be graduating from a new medical school campus at Cape Breton University. Our hope is that more young Nova Scotians can realize their dream of becoming a doctor here at home. There are many healthcare providers who want to come to Nova Scotia. It's getting easier and faster for internationally trained healthcare workers to get licensed. Our regulatory colleges are finding ways to ensure newly recruited doctors and nurses can start practicing in our communities more quickly. Mr. Speaker, we are finding solutions to keep our current workforce too. Earlier this week, our Premier sent a strong message to nurses and other healthcare workers. That was, we value you and want you to keep working in our province's healthcare system. That message came with retention incentives that we hope will encourage more nurses and other providers to stay working in Nova Scotia. And today I'm happy to announce another solution that will make Nova Scotia even more attractive to nurses. Starting for the 2023 tax year, we will include nurses in the More Opportunity for Skilled Trades provincial tax refund program. Eligible nurses under the age of 30 will receive a refund of the provincial income tax they pay on their first $50,000 of income. We need more healthcare workers, but we also need the system they work in to be effective so that people get faster access to care. People coming to an emergency department are facing great uncertainty. We want them to have confidence in the actions we are taking to improve the care they will receive. Things that will make a difference, like adding more nurse practitioners in emergency departments, having patient advocates in all emergency waiting rooms to interact with and keep an eye on people until they can be seen by the healthcare team, and adding a new role, care providers working in emergency department waiting rooms. And we're also opening more urgent treatment centers closer to where people live and freeing up trained paramedics by reducing the number of routine patient transfers they do. One of the biggest challenges in our system continues to be the time people are waiting for surgeries. Our investments this year will support more hospital beds, more technology, and better planning. We are increasing the number of hours operating rooms are working so that people can get the surgeries they need more quickly. Travel is a major barrier for people accessing care. which is why we are adding new options to help empower people to get the care they need closer to home. Through mobile health teams, community pharmacy locations, pharmacist walk-in clinics, more virtual care options, and expanding people's access to same-day, next-day primary care appointments. We are providing a range of improvements to cancer care services. This budget includes 14 new cancer drugs available under our PharmaCare programs. We are introducing a new early screening program for people at high risk of developing lung cancer and expanding services at community-based cancer sites so people can travel less and get more of the services they need in their community. We need to ensure our healthcare system understands our diverse communities and their needs to build trust and improve health outcomes. This includes training for healthcare workers, encouraging young people from underrepresented communities to consider careers in healthcare, and working with community leaders on other solutions. Mr. Speaker, our Action for Healthcare plan addresses the needs of people with addictions and mental health concerns. Our ultimate goal is offering universal access to mental health and addiction services. There is no one-size-fits-all solution, and that's why we're putting a variety of solutions in place that reflect the different needs of Nova Scotians. People have access to one-on-one supportive counseling with professionals to help with general mental health concerns over the phone, online, or in person. We've opened the province's first mental health acute day hospital at the QE2 Health Sciences Center and expect the second one to open this spring at the Cape Breton Regional Municipal Hospital. People with mental illness need of intensive treatment can get it at the hospital during the day and return home in the evening. This helps reduce the number of overnight hospital admissions, easing pressures on psychiatric units without compromising the quality of care. This year, more people struggling with addictions will have better access to care through 6 new recovery support centers. When there, clients have withdrawal support and can access other levels of care based on their individual needs, such as opioid use disorder treatment and community mental health and addictions programs. Too many Nova Scotians are waiting to get into long-term care, and it places incredible stress on families and strain on the entire health system. We are opening more spaces and recruiting more staff. Our government is committing to adding 1,200 new long-term care spaces and renovating 2,300 more by 2027.
Northside Westmount MLA Fred Tilley stood in the House seconds later in the provincial capital, and he accused the government of a flurry of spending in the last month in an effort to buy a surplus.
The title of this document, More Healthcare Faster. I would describe it as More Debt Quicker, Mr. Speaker. Under this budget, Mr. Speaker, the provincial debt will grow by one-third, from $16.6 billion upon taking office to $22.2 billion at the end of this mandate. And it's scheduled to grow even more in their estimate for the final year that's in this forecast, Mr. Speaker. And what does that mean? Well, it means that we are growing the debt with significantly increasing deficits, Mr. Speaker. Over the remaining term of this government, they will increase the debt through deficit of $1.6 billion, which will include a whopping $610 million deficit in the final year of their mandate. Mr. Speaker, if we look at the total $1.6 billion in deficit, this equates to $1,542 in debt per Nova Scotian. Over 4 years, 3 years, Mr. Speaker. If we look at the accumulated debt, which includes deficit and capital, we're looking at an increase in the province's debt of $5.6 billion, which equates to $5,400 per Nova Scotian. Mr. Speaker, we all understand that we have to make sure that the business of government operates. However, to put this province into this position in four simple years brings us back to a time of the 80s, Mr. Speaker. Spending, spending, spending with no plan, with no direction, just throwing money at the wall to see what sticks. Because of the growth, Mr. Speaker, in this soaring debt, the costs to service that debt, or the interest costs, and Nova Scotians understand, you have a loan, you pay interest. The interest costs, or the debt servicing costs, will grow significantly. In the final year of this mandate, the cost simply just to maintain this debt is $159 million more than it was in year two, Mr. Speaker. That is significant, a significant growth in debt servicing costs. Mr. Speaker, I'm worried about the future of this province, and everyone in this room should also be, as I'm sure Nova Scotians are. Mr. Speaker, when we look at this budget, there's nothing in this budget for Nova Scotians who are struggling, Mr. Speaker. No new housing developments, no increases in social assistance for those who are most vulnerable, Mr. Speaker. All the while, Nova Scotians see their spending power go down due to the rising cost of inflation. We all know that Nova Scotia is still well above the national average in inflation. Mr. Speaker, at the end of the day, there's only one way to pay for the, or there's two ways to pay for this spending. And it'll be interesting to see what future governments are going to have to do to make up for this. Will they have to raise taxes? Will they have to cut programs? Something is going to have to give, Mr. Speaker. We see in this budget a huge increase in provincial income taxes. The government will tell you it's due to immigration, it's due to more people coming in, it's due to more people making money. But it's also due to the fact that we have a hidden tax credit or a hidden tax expense here in Nova Scotia and the bracket creep, Mr. Speaker. So as spending power goes down, your income comes up. Well, you don't get the full amount of that income that you should get because it's going to income taxes. Where's the relief for young families? Young families who right now can't afford to purchase a home. They can't afford the rent. You look at the average rent in Nova Scotia, especially here in HRM, it's out of reach for many, many people. We see an increase of 1,000 rent supplements per year, Mr. Speaker. Well, you know what? On the surface, that's a great soundbite, looks great. There are no properties to rent. There are no properties for people to find. We also need to take a look at our housing income limits in this province. We need to raise those limits so that more people qualify for the programs that we have available to them to stay in their homes for seniors. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia has the highest income taxes in Atlantic Canada. We talked about this yesterday. As a matter of fact, we're probably the highest, close to the highest in Canada and in North America. as our income, as we continue to pay more income taxes, our debts grow. The debt for this province is continuing to grow. And when we look, Mr. Speaker, an alarming figure from this budget today is the debt to GDP ratio. Under the previous government, this was held to around 32%, Mr. Speaker. Based on the net deficit spending that we're seeing from this government and their forecast for the future, Mr. Speaker, that is going to bring us up close to the previous NDP government. No offense to my NDP colleagues, but we're approaching that 37% of GDP debt ratio. It's stuck in my brain now. I think we have the best NDP premier we've ever had right now, currently in spending, Mr. Speaker. Maybe not the best. Mr. Speaker, as we continue to see these levels climb, we just see most recently the government announced the removal of rent caps to 5%. Mr. Speaker, people can't afford rent as it is today. We're now going to move this to 5%. Their own projections for inflation are less than 5%. So my question is, where do we come up with this 5% number? How are Nova Scotians going to afford to pay that rent going forward? Mr. Speaker, I'd like to remind people about last year's budget. You will recall last year's budget, we had a surprise surplus of around $350 million that we didn't know was going to happen. Well, Mr. Speaker, the government made sure this year that we weren't going to have a surprise surplus when in the month of March, they doled out hundreds of millions of dollars in spending, Mr. Speaker, clearly at the last minute, without any thought, as we saw from the recent nursing bonus, of all of the individuals that were left out of this program, Mr. Speaker. Spending money for the sake of spending money when we could have ended up with a surplus in this province. Mr. Speaker, I am truly, as I mentioned, truly worried about the future of this province. And so should everyone in Nova Scotia be worried about this. Mr. Speaker, I will have more to say about the budget tomorrow when I have more time to go through the documents. But at this time, I'd like to motion to adjourn debate of the budget address.
That's all for Dialogue this week. Thanks for listening. I'm Bill McCush.
Catch Dialogue 3 times weekly, Sunday at noon, Tuesday and Thursday at 10 p.m. Dialogue is a production of the Coast 89.7 News. For story suggestions, contact 902-284-NEWS. That's 902-284-6397. Or email news@coastalradio.ca. For past episodes of Dialogue, check out our Dialogue podcasts, available now online at coastalradio.ca.